Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
George Selgin, who is a associate professor of economics at the University of Georgia. And let me tell you a little bit more about him. George has, George has taught at George Mason University and the University of Hong Kong. I'm going to get him to tell us about that in a minute. He's had articles to appear in many scholarly journals, as well as the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, and the National Review magazine. In 1997, he published a monogram called Less Than Zero, The Case for a Falling Price Level in a Growing Economy. We're going to talk about that because he talks about, in that monogram, he talks about how mild deflation can actually be a good thing. George, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
It's good to have you with us today. And, folks, I've got George with us on the show today. He's agreed to talk to us about currency. One of the things that we've talked about, we've hit on this a few times when we've had some of our other guests on the show. George, one of the guests we've had on the show where we've talked about this a little bit is a guy named Gary Schilling.
Yes.
I'm sure you know who Gary Schilling
yes,
is.
Yes, I'm familiar with him.
And he's also the author of a book called Deflation, a fairly new book that's out, which I think he probably agrees with a lot of the things that you point out in your Less Than Zero monogram. So we've touched on currency a little bit, but we've never devoted a whole show to it. And that's what I want us to do today is talk about some of the currency issues that are out there that are affecting the global economy and therefore are affecting all markets in the United States in some way or another, either every single business in some way, either directly or indirectly. And I think the average person out there and certainly the average small business owner, when they hear about currency issues, they hear things being said about the currency's this or it's that, or the yen is strengthened or weakened against the dollar or the Deutschmark or whatever, I think a lot of their eyes just kind of glaze over, don't they?
Sounds like some of my economics students.
Well, I'm sure some of your economics students are going to be our next entrepreneurs out there, and so maybe I'm sure you're doing some things to help them from ultimately when they leave your classroom not having their eyes glaze over, but help us a little bit to understand so that when we hear these issues, we can understand how to deal with them and how to make some sense of it, and perhaps even improve our lot against those currency issues in our small business?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's important to understand that different national currencies trade in the international market against one another.
Now, when you say they trade, tell us how does that work?
Well, persons who want to do business in a foreign country will first purchase the currency of that foreign country, and that means, for example, an American wishing to do business in Brazil will buy Brazilian reals using American dollars.
Right.
The real being the currency that's required to purchase goods in Brazil.
But see, a lot of people think that if you want to do business down there, you just send them dollars, and then you either sell or buy the amount of there's just an exchange there. They don't actually think about. I think a lot of times I don't actually think that you actually bought any of their currency. You just think that there was an exchange.
Well, it depends on the nature of the transaction. Of course, for some larger transactions, international bills of exchange are used, which avoid the actual purchasing of physical real.
Actually, having to own the currency.
That's right.
Right.
But if you think about smaller transactions, for example, transactions by tourists who visit Brazil,
right.
In that case you have actual purchases of the currency.
Of course.
Nevertheless, in either case, it amounts to having to trade dollar-denominated assets for real-denominated assets. And so we can speak about there being a dollar-real exchange market where the two are traded and where there's an exchange rate that expresses the price in terms of one currency in terms of the other.
Right. And of course, that's what we hear about. In fact, every day if you read anything on the website, on the various websites or you hear any kind of economic news, a lot of times on this show, Scott Montminy, when he does our business news summary for the Small Business Advocate Show, he talks about he reports on the fact that the yen or the mark or the euro or whatever has strengthened or weakened against the dollar. What does it mean when we hear that? For example, there's something that I got off the net this morning that said that the yen fell against the dollar.
That's right.
Even though it went actually went up. In other words, yesterday, the day before yesterday, the yen was 115 against the dollar, and today it's 116 against the dollar, but yet the term is that it fell against the dollar.
That's right. Well,
Explain how that works.
What that means is that the value of the yen fell relative to the value of the dollar. Therefore, it takes more yens to buy a dollar than it took before.
Okay.
That's why the number is higher.
Yeah. All right. Good. That's a very good explanation. Let's talk about the way the exchange rates work and how that affects the prices of goods and services. If a currency is weaker against the dollar, that means that their goods and services you can get more for the other country's goods for our dollar, right?
Exactly. If the value of the yen falls relative to the dollar, it means that a dollar purchases more yen than it did before, and given prices in Japan, you can buy goods more cheaply in Japan with dollars than was the case previously.
So if you are a consumer of their goods, if you are a traveler to their country and their currency weakens, it's good for you. If you are a competitor of their products in our marketplace, then it is not good for you.
That's right.
George, stand by.
If you're an exporter or a tourist, you benefit.
Exactly. George, stand by. That's the music. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back after these messages, folks. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassing, the Small Business Advocate. Our guest is George Selgin. He's going to be right back with us. We're talking about currency. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassing, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. If you'd like to ask a question of me or my guest, our new friend, George Selgin, Dr. George Selgin, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Georgia, you can call that number, 888-822-8255, and I will remind you that my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com, www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Just spell the words all out, put them together, no dashes or dots or anything like that in the middle, and you can check it out. George,
yes.
We've been talking about the currency issues, and what I want to do, I want to get to Brazil in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to Brazil, because the reason I say Brazil, folks, is because that's the alligator that seems to be biting us right now with regard to global weakening and a jeopardizing of the global economy at the moment. It's the currency of the month problem, so to speak. Let's go back about almost 2 years. Correct me on my dates if I'm wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 2 years, the first little domino that dropped was Thailand, wasn't it?
That's right.
Tell us about that.
Well, in Thailand, there was a speculative attack on the baht. And
say that again?
There was a speculative attack on the Thai baht. That's their currency.
Yes, spell that.
The B-A-H-T.
B-A-H-T. Okay, the baht. Go ahead.
Yes. And this was prompted by investors' feelings that the Thai situation, which involved a pegged exchange rate between the baht and the dollar, was fundamentally unsound. That is, people felt that the Thai authorities did not have sufficient dollar reserves with which to maintain that pegged exchange rate. This led to fear of devaluation, which caused people to sell off the baht and trade it in for dollars.
A pegged rate is as opposed to a floating rate.
That's right.
Okay.
And the interesting thing about these speculative attacks or runs is that they can often be self-fulfilling.
Uh-huh.
The fact that people feared that the baht would be devalued caused them to cash in bahts and exhaust the Thai authorities' dollar reserves, which in turn forced the hand of the Thai central bank, causing it, in fact, to do exactly what the investors had feared it would do, which was to devalue.
Could that be done in a way that would be intending to cause that? Is there some way to work an angle on that through some kind of hedging or something where if you could make that happen, you could actually make money?
Yes, absolutely.
Can that be proven? And if proven, could you be held liable for that?
Well, I don't think that anyone can be held liable. George Soros, the well-known investor,
yep.
has profited by engaging in currency attacks,
mm-hmm.
where he has gambled that a currency would be devalued. He has borrowed large amounts of that currency, and then he has in turn turned it in to the authorities, exchanging it for dollars at the fixed rate.
Right.
Well, when they run out of dollars, they devalue, and he gets to pay back his loan
at
with
lower rate.
Lots that are worth less than they were before.
Very interesting perspective.
He, incidentally, Soros did another thing just to absolutely ensure that he wouldn't suffer any tremendous losses, even if the authorities didn't devalue. He gambled that interest rates would rise in an effort to protect the baht.
Right.
And this way, even if the devaluation didn't occur as he had hoped for, the increase in interest rates would itself be a source of profit.
A very clever
arrangement.
He couldn't lose.
Couldn't lose.
Unbelievable. Now, a pegged rate is where the country, and I don't mean to say when I use the word artificial, I don't mean that means that it wasn't an accurate estimation, but it is an artificial. Or maybe an arbitrary would be the better word to use, an arbitrary exchange rate that the country has determined. Is that right?
That's right. Sometimes pegged exchange rates are consistent with the fundamentals, and when that's true, they can be maintained for some time until things change.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, a pegged rate is not necessarily consistent with the market fundamentals, and the central bank can find itself in a situation where it's slowly running out of reserves and ultimately has to decide whether to take dramatic measures to try and preserve the pegged rate or to allow the currency to devalue.
Right. Folks, this is fascinating stuff for me. I hope it is for you. I really enjoying learning about this. I'm learning as you are many of these things. It's 29 after the hour. Our new friend is our special guest, George Selgin, Dr. George Selgin, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Georgia. We're talking about currency issues and how that affects us, and we're going to get more specifically in a minute, more specific about how it affects your small business. 888-822-8255. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our special guest today is Dr. George Selgin, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Georgia, and he is talking to us, he's visiting with us to talk about currency issues and how that affects the global economy and especially how that filters down into your own little marketplace. George, we were talking about Thailand a minute ago, and you were telling us a little bit about what happened over there, and we got in some points about pegged currency and floating currency and that sort of thing. The reason I wanted to start there is because the real problems that we've got right now around the globe kind of started there. I mean, we had other problems that were under the surface or whatever, but the Thailand thing triggered a problem in Indonesia, didn't it?
Yes, it did, and also in other parts of Southeast Asia, though Indonesia turned out to be one of the places that ended up worse off.
That actually became a political issue, too, didn't it?
Yes, it did. In fact, it toppled this Suharto government.
Allegedly.
Yes.
I still wonder if we don't have the same government, different faces. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I don't know much about that. But then after Indonesia, then it moved on, and the other shoe was just waiting to drop in Japan, wasn't it?
Yes, and Japan, of course, had had problems with its banking system for some time.
That's right.
So the Japanese economy was weak, and this just represented another blow to the Japanese economy.
Because the Japanese do a lot of business in that region.
Absolutely. They depend on that region as a market, and devaluation, as we said before, makes it very difficult for firms to export to the region where devaluation has taken place.
Well, now let's stop for just a moment, and I'm not trying to develop some kind of conspiracy theory here, but is it possible that I'm not saying that he did this. This is just a scenario. Is it possible that somebody like Soros or anyone could have gone to Thailand and speculated on their currency, and maybe without realizing it, maybe without intending to do it, caused that currency to collapse, And that could, that one individual or that one scenario could have caused the chain reaction?
Well, I think it's all too tempting to try and to exaggerate the power of someone like Soros. Usually, when a currency attack succeeds, it means that the fundamentals were not sound.
Right.
That is, that the central bank in question had relatively low foreign currency reserves with which to maintain its exchange rate,
mm-hmm.
that the currency was probably overvalued to begin with. And what that in turn means is that if Soros hadn't been the one to initiate the run, somebody else inevitably would have gotten the jitters and done it.
Or the fundamentals would have just fulfilled themselves. I mean,
just
in a multiple way rather than a singular way, it would have just collapsed on its own.
Yes. At some point, somebody would have started to develop a fear that devaluation would take place.
Right.
And at that point, that person and others like him would proceed to sell off the currency.
So is that an argument against pegging a currency?
Yes, it is an argument against pegging a currency, at least through central banks. It's a fact that a pegged currency administered by a central bank is inherently vulnerable to these kinds of attacks. There's no such thing as a 100% secure pegged currency. Now, at least not with a central bank. You can have something close to 100% security if instead of having a central bank peg the currency, you have something called a currency board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference is that a currency board maintains 100%, at least 100% reserves of the foreign currency to which it pegs its own currency.
Hmm.
With 100% reserves, even if there were a massive run on the currency board would always be able to supply dollars in exchange for its own currency.
And so what you're saying
is that, running out.
What you're saying is because of that fundamental approach, those kinds of solid fundamentals would prevent the currency from collapsing.
That's right.
Because there would be there'd be no fear of the currency collapsing, and number two, there would be no speculative opportunity.
There would be less fear of the currency collapsing because the currency board wouldn't be forced into a situation of having to devalue on account of running out of reserves.
So the classic two emotions that cause people to invest apply here when we're talking about currency stability, and that is fear and greed.
Yes, I suppose.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Talk to us a little bit more about this currency board and what's the difference between a central bank and a currency board?
Well, again, the main difference is that a currency board by statute has to hold at least 100% reserves of foreign currency.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Hong Kong has a currency board. The other place that has a currency board right now is Argentina. In Hong Kong, the Hong Kong dollar is pegged at 7.8 Hong Kong dollars to one U.S. dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you happen to be holding 78 Hong Kong dollars, you can be sure that the Hong Kong currency board has at least 10 U.S. dollars to back him up.
But now, and we obviously have a central bank in this country.
Yes, we do, but we don't peg our exchange rate. We are in the fortunate position of being the country whose currency other countries
right.
peg theirs to.
And I want to talk about that in a minute, vis-a-vis that, the dollar and the euro, in just a few minutes. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. It's 39 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is doing a great job, Dr. George Selgin, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Georgia. We're talking about currency issues around the globe. Stay with us. We are back, and it's 44 after the hour. And I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. You're listening to the show that is dedicated to the success of small business owners and the future success of small business dreamers. And our special guest is our new friend, Professor George Selgin, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Georgia. And we're talking about global currencies. And George, I want to thank you for the great job you're doing this hour. You've really helped me understand a lot of things a lot better. And before we go any further on a discussion of currencies, James tells me we have a caller. Mark, are you there? Hi, Mark.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great show.
Thank you, sir. Say hello to George Selgin.
Hi. If I may ask a question.
Yes, of course.
Why don't all countries have currency boards. Surely Japan could afford one. Wouldn't that solve all the problems? What is the problem? What is the difficulty in?
Well, currency boards remain very controversial. You know, 10 years ago, hardly anyone even knew what they were. And that was the beginning of a movement to popularize the idea. The resistance to currency boards is often based on countries' desire to be able to pursue independent monetary policies. That is, they like to have the option of not pegging their currency under certain circumstances. And it's because of this desire to have the option occasionally to devalue that many countries are anxious not to commit themselves to currency board situations.
You know, Mark, that's an excellent question. And George, Mark brings up the good question he mentioned the end of his very question there was, surely Japan can afford this. Having a currency board, as you said, as Argentina does, I guess that is expensive, isn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't. It's expensive in the sense that the currency board has to have a large amount of foreign currency reserves. But those reserves don't actually have to take the form of, say, physical U.S. dollars. Mainly, these reserves would consist of dollar-denominated bonds that earn interest.
Mm-hmm.
So the currency board isn't all that expensive.
So it could be an income-producing property, basically.
Oh, yes. They typically are.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I see what you mean. Yeah. And therefore, you've got your currency markets where people are trading in the various currencies.
That's right.
Yeah. Mark, outstanding question. You got anything else you'd like to say?
Well, why then? Couldn't the country in question switch back to its old pegging method if it wants to devalue and then switch back to currency board if it wants to protect its currency?
Well, that's a very good question. If it is self-defeating for a country to try and have a currency board if it reserves the right still to devalue. The whole point of a currency board is to provide investors with an assurance that devaluation simply isn't an option.
They'd lose the confidence, wouldn't they?
They would lose the confidence, and therefore the fact that they have initially 100% reserves would not really buy them any advantage as far as maintaining consumers' confidence.
Right.
But if you, Professor, were asked by the government of Japan to decide which is preferable, currency board or the current weak condition,
yes,
what would you recommend?
Well, in the case of Japan, I'm afraid it would be difficult to make a recommendation. You see, Japan's currency has traditionally been one of the strongest world currencies,
right,
making Japan certainly not the most obvious place to put a currency board. Generally, currency boards are advisable in countries that have a very poor record of maintaining a strong currency. Countries that simply haven't been able to produce a strong currency on their own, those are the real candidates for having currency boards. Those are countries where it simply makes more sense to import a sound currency from abroad. But I would say Japan doesn't really fit that category.
So, George, what you're saying is that if you're an emerging country, an emerging market, and you would like to not be an emerging market any longer than is necessary, as Mark was recommending, just develop a currency board and try to focus on that, and that should strengthen the confidence in the investors in your currency.
That's right. A country needs to establish confidence in its currency, and some countries simply have not succeeded in doing so. As long as they produce their own currencies with central banks.
Right.
And those are the countries that really need to seriously consider the currency board alternative. Russia, for example, really ought to consider establishing a currency board instead of its central bank, because the Russian ruble simply doesn't command any confidence at all.
Right. Mark, you sound like you've got a very well-developed perspective on all this. Do you have some
background? I'm learning with you all. I mean, I didn't realize a currency board was an alternative. And it seems like there might be a solution to the world problem, but apparently there isn't. Why doesn't the solution get applied?
Mark, excellent question. We're going to have to hang on a second, Mark. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back, folks, after this few messages. It's 50 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is Professor George Selgin of the University of Georgia. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great hour with our new friend, Professor George Selgin, Dr. George Selgin, the Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Georgia. We're talking about currency issues all around the world and how they affect all of us. And we still have a caller. Mark, I think, is still with us, and I'm going to get Mark back on just for a second in a minute. But, George, there's so much to talk about that I really would like to invite you to come back and be with us another day, and let's keep talking about this, because we set up a lot of good information, but there's still a lot left to talk about, and I hope you'll do that.
Oh, yes, it's a very big issue, but yes. Thank you. I would like that opportunity.
And I want to thank Mark for calling in and asking two or three really good questions. Mark, I've only got a half a minute. Have you got anything you'd like to say before you go? Are you there, Mark? He must have hung up. Well, thank you for calling, Mark. You did. Are you there, Mark?
Yes. Russians are pretty smart. The people, why wouldn't they adopt a currency board, except for the drawback that I guess they couldn't devalue and increase their export trade? Is that the kind of issue? You know?
Yes, they want to be able to have that option, and they don't want to be absolutely committed to a fixed exchange rate. There are also issues of national pride. Some countries don't like the idea of relying on another country's currency and letting that country's policy dictate their own currency policy. And that's effectively what they have to do with the currency board. If Argentina, for example, by having a currency board linked to the dollar, Argentina is not in a position to pursue an independent monetary policy. Its money supply depends on what the American monetary authorities are doing.
Mark, thank you very much for calling. I'm going to have to let you go because we've got to wrap up the hour in a couple of minutes. You asked some great questions, and I really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Mark.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. All right, we've got to wrap it up with Mark there. All right, George, we've just got a minute or so. One of the things that I want to do when you come back is I want to talk more about the Fed, the Treasury Department, the IMF, and how all those guys work together, and I'm looking forward to doing that. But before we finish up the hour, let's talk about how in literally just in a minute how small businesses are affected by all this.
Well, as we said before, when a country devalues its currency, for example, when Brazil devalued its currency, this is good news for businesses that import goods from Brazil and for the Brazilian tourist trade, but it's bad news for any business trying to export goods to Brazil. It's also bad news for small businessmen who do business with firms that try to export. So if you're manufacturing parts for General Electric dishwashers and they have a large Brazilian market, their devaluation is in effect going to make those dishwashers cost 23% more than they did before for the Brazilian people. That's going to bite into sales and is eventually going to hurt your business in a significant way.
So if you can buy a dishwasher made in Argentina or a dishwasher made in Brazil, maybe today you need to be buying the one made in Brazil.
If you're a Brazilian, you do, and even if you're an American, you might be tempted.
Yeah, if you're importing it, yeah. George, listen, we're coming up on the end of the hour. We've got to wrap it up for this hour. Thank you very much for doing a great job in helping us understand this very technical and very sophisticated issue and helping us to put it into layman's terms. You did a really great job.
Thank you very much, Jim. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. I've enjoyed having you with us, and we'll have you back again real soon.
Thanks.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because you're the most important member of my show. Because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.